Thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm excited to be back on the Lido at the Venice Film Festival. You know, it was a strange experience. Most of my films take many, many years to come to life. You know, Black Swan was 10 years, Noah was 20 years, and this film happened in 5 days, and it was a strange thing. And I think it came out of, you know, living on this planet and sort of seeing what's happening around us and not being able to do anything. I just had a lot of rage and anger, and I just wanted to sort of channel it into one emotion, into one feeling. And in 5 days, I wrote the first version of the script. It just sort of poured out of me.
The writer and director Darren Aronofsky makes a triumphant return to Venice with a shocking and horrifyingly audacious headline act. From the 74th Venice International Film Festival, this is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24. Coming up, we'll review Aronofsky's mysterious new film, Mother, before it makes a swift leap from the Lido to screens all around the world. Also ahead.
Every big festival needs big names. Well-established filmmaker, long-awaited films. Without them, it would be difficult to get the attention from the general media from all over the world.
We'll sit down with the festival's director, Alberto Barbera, to find out how he brought prestige and industry heavyweights back to Venice. And
una famiglia importante solo se si guarda i numeri. Terza di sette figlie e così creatura a carica. Ma
un We'll review a new Italian animation told largely in the Neapolitan dialect, proof that Venice is still, at its heart, all about Italy. That's all to come on this special edition of The Cinema Show from the 74th Venice International Film Festival on Monocle 24. Hello, I'm Ben Ryland, coming to you from the Palazzo del Cinema, the beating heart of this year's film festival. A feast of filth. That's how one of the main attractions here has been described, and no, they weren't referring to those notorious hordes of tourists. Darren Aronofsky is back at the event that launched his spectacular 2010 success, Black Swan. This year, he's brought with him Jennifer Lawrence, Javier Bardem, Ed Harris, and making a very welcome return to the big screen, Michelle Pfeiffer. Mother, styled with a small M and an exclamation mark, has been inducing churns in the stomachs of audiences and sub-editors everywhere. It's a shocking, disturbing, and darkly funny story of a woman in the grip of mounting paranoia as a pair of uninvited guests storm their way into their remote farmhouse.
We spend all our time here. I want to make a paradise.
She redid all of it. Every last detail. And she breathed life back into every room.
Are you happy?
I love you.
Now imagine for a moment that a performance of the classic play Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf were rudely interrupted by the ghosts of Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby, only for an apocalyptic volcano to erupt beneath the set and swallow it whole. That's almost how it feels to bear witness to Aronofsky's latest creation and all its audacious commentary on creativity, egotism, religion, and the peril of unquestioned worship. Where Black Swan gave us an operatic vision of being consumed by one's passion or obsession, Mother aims for nightmares instead. There's none of that film's fashion magazine flair. The couple, played by Lawrence and Bardem, live in a country house that's got more in common with a 90s Laura Ashley catalogue. Musical elements have also been stripped to a bare minimum. At a press conference shortly after the film's premiere, Aronofsky told us how his color and sound palette came together.
It was interesting because, you know, we started the process working with Johan Johansson, one of the greatest composers working today. And both of us, as we experimented for months with music, realized that whenever you put music into a scene, it immediately told the audience how to feel. And the entire purpose of Mother is that it's a mystery. It's constantly surprising the audience. You don't know where it's going to go. And we didn't want to make the audience ever feel safe, because Jennifer's character in the movie never feels safe. Jennifer's character is constantly trying to figure out what's happening to her. And anytime you put music into the movie, it leaned into a certain emotion. I've always been interested in sound design, and I worked with Craig Hennigan, my sound designer, on this one like I have for the last six films or so. And it was all about bringing the audience once again into Mother's point of view, because I wanted the audience to experience Mother and her take on this invasion that was happening to her, because that's the point of the movie. And the design of the film was all about starting in a place of making it very, very natural and of the earth, because we were making this big allegory. And then slowly, as humanity invades, they start to bring in all the different types of colors and materials that are not natural to the planet.
There's not a lot about this film to be certain of. It's deliberately confusing and as unpredictable as its potentially delusional protagonist. When Mother begins, we're introduced to a couple whose lives seem just a little bit too storybook, and a Jennifer Lawrence who, despite living in what's apparently her dream home, seems to exist in a permanent state of apprehension. In her role as the wife of an erratic writer, Jennifer Lawrence told us that she was fascinated by the strange anxiety of her character.
I mean, it was a completely different character from anything I've ever done before, but it was also a completely different side of myself that I wasn't in touch with and I didn't really know yet. And we had a really rigorous rehearsal process for 3 months. There was a part of me that Darren really helped me get in touch with. So it was difficult. It was the most I've ever had to pull out of myself.
Seated beside Lawrence was Michelle Pfeiffer, who recalled some of the reactions she's seen to her star turn as one of the film's unwelcome guests.
In a review I read today, they described my character as a gargoyle, which I rather liked. At first I thought, oh, that's kind of insulting, and I thought, actually, it's kind of good, because she is a bit of a gargoyle. She's kind of up there watching over everything, and I mean, I guess she is somewhat of an invader, but I also think that I look at it as she's actually Jennifer's guardian angel, and she actually shows up and awakens her in a way and becomes a mirror, and I think she comes and she immediately sees that there's trouble in paradise. A little older and a little wiser, and I think she's trying to help her, in my point of view.
Aronofsky has been quite adamant about keeping the details of the plot secret, so I won't give away anything else, but like the religious text it takes aim at, the action here is allegorical, and perhaps best understood as a satirical night-scarish spin on the old Wizard of Oz technique of telling a dream story via actions and events that merely hint at what's really going on.
I mean, it really has to do with the allegory of the film and what we're trying to connect there to answer that question, because I'm not going to go further. You'll figure it out. Just think about it for a while. You're on to it.
Mother will be making a very quick leap from the screens here in Venice to screens everywhere very soon, so do keep an eye out. Still to come on The Cinema Show, we will take a seat on the rooftop of the Palazzo del Cinema for a chat with the man in charge of the Venice International Film Festival, Alberto Barbera. Stay tuned.
Hello, this is Rudolph Valentino, the legendary Hollywood movie actor, and I'd like to tell you about an amazing program here on Monocle 24, The Cinema Show.
When you are at the Oscars, I've been at the ceremony once, it's a very, very different feeling than you get in New York or London or wherever else around the globe, because this is an industry town and this is its night.
Each week, The Cinema Show meets some of the most fascinating personalities from the world of movies. In fact, if I weren't strictly a star of silent movies, I might even appear on the show myself. The Cinema Show, in association with MUBI, because life is too short for bad films, and I should know.
You're listening to a special edition of The Cinema Show on Monocle 24, coming to you from the 74th Venice International Film Festival. I'm Ben Ryland. The future of this prestigious event seems to be in very good hands, but that wasn't always the case. Just a few years ago, Venice's place amongst the industry elite was fading. It wasn't known as a place to sell a film, and some US filmmakers were even skipping the event altogether. When Alberto Barbera took over as festival director in 2012, he got to work reinvigorating the festival's image. Theatres were renovated, venues were upgraded, and world-class talent was lured back with the introduction of a sales market similar to the famed Marché du Film at Cannes. And it seems to be paying off. Some of the films that have been launched here in recent years include Gravity, Birdman, and of course Black Swan. And as we've already heard, that film's director, Darren Aronofsky, is one of the headline names at this year's event. I sat down with Alberto Barbera on the roof of the Palazzo del Cinema for a chat about how the world's oldest film festival is preparing for the years ahead.
The Venice Film Festival, the oldest in the world with a great prestige, it went through a difficult period when the competition with, especially with the competition with the Toronto, when most of the films and especially the film business people were skipping Venice, going there directly to Toronto, thinking that Toronto was a major opportunity to launch the film, to sell the film. Considering that Toronto was a sort of a gateway to the American market for most of the rest of the world and so on. So when I came back to Venice in 2012, I realized that the future of Venice was related to the capacity to bring back Venice to the role that have had in the past, trying to convince the studios to come back to Venice to launch their film, trying to convince the film people, sales agents, buyers, and everything, to attend the festival again instead of skipping it. And what we did in the last 6 years was exactly this, renovating all the venues, renovating all the facilities, improving all the services that we offer to the filmmakers, to the production companies, to the journalists, to the guests of the festival, and at the same time trying to convince major film studios to come back to Venice. And we were lucky enough to get some big films that went to the Oscars, like Gravity, Birdman, and so on. This, of course, helped a lot to this process of rebuilding the profile of Venice and making, again, Venice one of the appointments that cannot be missed in this period of the year.
You can be a very popular film festival as far as the press goes, as far as the public goes, but that doesn't necessarily translate to being popular amongst the industry. How important is it that the festival maintains that reputation amongst film industry professionals as well?
Again, it's a matter of what we can offer them. So for this reason, we decided to start a light market in 2012. We didn't have a market. The film people didn't have a reason to come to Venice. We had a lot. Venice still had a lot of filmmakers coming to Venice with their film. It was not conceived a place where to start a negotiation for selling a film. So we needed to have a market, so we decided to start a light market that has been evolving in the years, and now it's much bigger with a lot of attendees. It's working very well, and we have the key people from the business world. They are back again to Venice. Some of them now they're considering to come to Venice and maybe not going anymore to Toronto for this reason, because, I mean, they come here, a 5 days market, which is very effective, easy working, because it's a small place and everybody can meet others easily. We change also the aim of the market. It's not a general market anymore. It's a sort of gap financing forum, which works very, very well with a lot of side events and opportunities. So we succeeded also in this way, bringing back the film business people to Venice.
Of course, it is the world's oldest film festival, and it's obviously still going strong. There are some major talents here this year as well. What difference do you think it makes for the Venice Film Festival to be able to attract people of the caliber like George Clooney, who's here this year with Suburbicon, Darren Aronofsky with his new film Mother? I mean, these are some major films that are likely to set the agenda in the year going forward. Is that a key part of what makes Venice still one of the world's best film festivals?
Definitely. Every big festival needs big names, well-established filmmaker, long-awaited films and so on, because most of the press, most of the media are interested to big films, to talents. Most of the information, the nowadays information, is based on the anticipation of the new films and the interviews with talent and so on. So, I mean, we need to have big films. It's part of the... Not only because big films are part of the offer that cinema makes for the audience, but also because without them it would be difficult to get the attention from the general media from all over the world. And we absolutely need that to offer the films a strong launching platform also for the smaller films.
Well, of course, Venice is one of the world's most beautiful cities as well. So regardless of the festival, people are going to flock to the city as they always have, sometimes maybe in too large numbers. As far as the presence of Italian films go, if you look at the calendar of films you've got here, there's a very, very strong Italian presence, which is always such a nourishing thought as well. How do you go about making sure that the festival remains an ambassador for Italian film going forward as well? Because, of course, you know, Italian films themselves have a very rich history too, but perhaps not always as visible as they should be on the international stage.
Absolutely. This year we have more Italian film than usual. We decided to enlarge the number of Italian films in the festival, in the different categories of the festival, because I think it's a peculiar moment for Italian cinema. There's a lot of newcomers, debut films or second or third film made by young directors. I have the feeling that there's a sort of a new generation of filmmakers taking over. Finally, after many, many years, I mean, we still have a lot of masters working, talking about Nanni Moretti, Bellocchio, Sorrentino, Garrone. Of course, they are the biggest name we have. They have an international audience and so on. But for the rest of the Italian filmmakers, it's very difficult to travel abroad with their film. But now I think that there is a different attitude from them. They think in terms of international market. They try to do something different from the past. They are not anymore making the same films, the same Italian comedies, which were the richness of the Italian cinema in the 60s, but now they get repetitive and they don't travel anymore abroad, with very few exceptions. This new generation of young filmmakers, they are trying to make something different. Sometimes they make films, they shot their film in English with the international cast. They do co-productions with other international countries, which is a tool to get access to other markets in the world, of course. But what is interesting is that they try to build a sort of new paradigm for the Italian cinema, a new narrative, new stories, not only comedies, not only social drama. So I think it's a very exciting moment.
Well, just finally picking up on that point as well, because as you suggested, there has been a bit of a generational divide in what we know of Italian cinema. A lot of people, when they think of Italian cinema, think of classics, not necessarily current films that are playing at the moment. But I think there is a strength in Italian cinema in that when there is a major talent in the world of Italian cinema, they tend to continue making films in Italian for Italian audiences, and then they resonate around the world as well. That's not always the case in a lot of other industries that can be quite small. One would imagine that is in maybe large part because of festivals like Venice. This is a prestigious festival that also nourishes homegrown Italian talent. How important is that to the overall brand of the festival itself?
Well, I think it's very important in a double sense that a festival can help a lot to introduce to the world new filmmakers and new films, to get attention from them, to say, pay attention because these are good films, they are talented filmmakers, they are not well-known or completely unknown because they are newcomers, but they could be the filmmakers of tomorrow. This could be the Italian cinema that we will deal with in the next few years. So the promotion for the Italian cinema starts in a festival. So it's an important role. And on the other side, the festival take profit from the fact that there is quality production in the Italian cinema, which is not the case in the past. I mean, I used to complain in the last 4 or 5 years about the quality of the Italian movies, in the sense that there were a lot of films, the quantity of films that was produced in Italy in the last 2 or 3 years is incredible, more than 200 films. And 2/3 of them, they couldn't reach the market because there was no place for them in the commercial release. But the quality was not there. The quality was really very poor and decreasing. This year is different. This year we have a huge amount of production, but at the same time, I would say there is some new trends of quality that will probably change the profile of the Italian cinema in the next few years.
Alberto Barbera there, director of the Venice International Film Festival. Coming up, we'll look at one way Venice is keeping the flame of Italian film burning with a new animated feature made in Naples. Stay tuned.
If you couldn't make it to Venice this year, don't worry. MUBI has you covered. It's the only film festival that's always playing all year round. Among the titles showing right now is the silent classic Regeneration from 1915, which was for a long time thought to be a lost film. There's also La Leon from 2007, set against the mysterious backdrop of a misty Argentinian waterway, and a mini-festival celebrating the work of French auteur Bertrand Mandicot. His new film, Les Garçons Sauvages, is one of the star attractions at this year's Venice Film Festival. MUBI is the curated movie site of cult, classic and award-winning films. Catch a whole month for free? Head over to mubi.com/Monaco. That's MUBI/Monaco.
This is The Cinema Show on Monocle 24, coming to you from the 74th Venice International Film Festival. When it comes to animation on the big screen, we're perhaps just a little bit too used to titles by Disney, Pixar or Studio Ghibli. Well, this year, Venice has offered us up something completely different.
15 anni aspettato venisse questo giorno. Guarda, guarda, così doveva essere. Io dovevo stare al posto tuo.
Però vedi, noi siamo solo la prima parte della storia. Il meglio deve ancora venire.
Il matrimonio è l'unico vero strumento di rivoluzione sociale.
Gata Cenerentola is the second feature-length animation by Alessandro Rack, following his well-received film from 2013, The Art of Happiness. That film was a low-key story of a taxi driver struggling with the aftermath of being abandoned by his brother, and it featured some absolutely beautiful imagery. Alessandro Rack has teamed up with three colleagues for Gata Cenerentola, which literally translates to Cinderella the Cat. Some have called this a fairy tale aimed at grown-ups, but it really has more in common with classic Japanese animation, with a dash of Andrei Tarkovsky thrown in there too. The film begins with a Citizen Kane-inspired newsreel, recalling the story of an ambitious science hub aboard a ship in the Gulf of Naples. Don Vittorio Basile plans to use his fantastic new photosweep technology, perhaps better described as lifelike holograms, to bring the dirty city into an ambitious new age of scientific brilliance. Needless to say, things don't quite go to plan, and we're soon thrown into a future where Basile's dreams are a mere memory to those he's left behind. The ship, however, remains moored in the bay, with his now teenage daughter still on board, held prisoner by a violent, egotistical drug lord. Alessandro Rack and his team have conjured up beautiful animation techniques here. Where the giant Hollywood studios aim for near-human-like detail, Rack takes a far more artistic approach. It's almost like watching a watercolor painting come to life. The fact that this is an Italian animation set in Naples and told largely in the Neapolitan dialect is an achievement in itself. Ruck is clearly an auteur in the making and will hopefully inspire a whole new crop of Italian animators too. The film's depiction of the city of Naples, however, well, it's one of crime and grittiness, a satire perhaps of how deeply the mafia has crafted the city's image, as reflected in Roberto Saviano's Gomorra. But it certainly won't be inspiring people to visit the city, which, for such a culturally aware film, feels like a bit of a missed opportunity. At its heart, though, Gutter Cenerentola is another chapter of Italy's long-running story of optimistic creators with dreams bigger than the Palace of Caserta, and the homegrown corruption that feeds upon that ambition. Like the story of Italy itself, there are layers of lightness and darkness here, but there's also the lingering feeling that Italian animation has many more stories to tell. Another film attracting its share of attention this year is Suburbicon. George Clooney is back in the director's chair for this story of what's apparently the world's best housing estate. Now, it's not giving anything away to reveal that, in fact, the development is really just a facade for white middle-class privilege. There's another excellent cast assembled here: Julianne Moore, a rather rotund Matt Damon, and Oscar Isaac.
Welcome to Suburbicon, a town of great wonder and excitement.
Hey there.
Built with the promise of prosperity for all.
Nicky, you need to get up. There are men in the house.
Now, the film was actually written by the Coen brothers, and needless to say, things get fairly twisted. A few people have been musing over whether it's their reaction to the age of Donald Trump. Now, whether that was the intention, we don't know, but what we do know is that they actually wrote the draft about 30 years ago, which might just go to show how everlasting some of those racial plot lines might be. And we simply couldn't leave Venice without mentioning Robert Redford and Jane Fonda. Fans of classic romantic comedies will remember a film they starred in together way back in 1967 called Barefoot in the Park. Well, they're reigniting some of that screen chemistry with the romantic drama Our Souls at Night. It's not often we get to see a romantic drama headlined by two stars hovering around the age of 80, but as Robert Redford and Jane Fonda told us during a press conference, that was partly why they wanted to do the film.
Jane and I had a long history in film, and I wanted us to be able to have another chance, and we were getting older, and I thought, well, wait a minute, here's a film that can satisfy our genuine age.
It's actually Barefoot in the Park. It was me that couldn't keep my hands off him. I was constantly forcing myself on him. While we were making this movie now, The Souls at Night, Our Souls at Night, I realized they're totally different films, but the dynamic between my character and his character were somewhat similar to Barefoot in the Park. My character, Addie, is the one, she's the spark plug. She's the one that says, come on, let's do this. You know, and she's always kind of moving them forward, and he's kind of lagging behind. So there was that similarity that was a lot of fun. And I just love the fact that these films bookend our careers, you know, that we played that young love just getting married, and now we played old people's love and old people's sex, although, you know, in my opinion, Ritesh cut the sex scene too soon, but or maybe that was you that decided to cut it too soon.
No, it wasn't me.
I don't know. He doesn't like sex scenes.
It was a very
scenes with him.
it was a really hard decision.
It's a great kisser.
Robert Redford and Jane Fonda were the recipients of the Golden Lion Lifetime Achievement Award at the weekend. Our Souls at Night is screening out of competition. Now, I have been asking a few fellow cinema-goers after each screening for their predictions of who might take away this year's Golden Lion, but it seems just about everyone is being too coy. Of course, there are still plenty of films to see before the festival wraps up for this year. We'll have a full wrap of the winners coming up next week on The Cinema Show. Today's show was edited and mixed by Kieran Matthew Banerjee and researched by Yolene Goffan. From the 74th Venice International Film Festival, I'm Ben Rylan. Thank you for listening.